There's a big game coming up, and it's going to be a good one. You've got your buddies coming over. You're all pumped. You know it wouldn't be good if your friends get thirsty and you have nothing to offer them. So do yourself a favor. Gear up to watch all the games by picking up a 6-pack of Coca-Cola and an 8-pack of Powerade at Walmart. When you pick up Coca-Cola and Powerade at Walmart, you're always ready for tip-off. And get in on the NCAA March Madness action by visiting coke.com/always ready. That's coke.com/always ready. NCAA and March Madness are trademarks of the National Collegiate Athletic Association. All right, Danny, this is always one of my favorite episodes of the year, although it does involve, as always, a bunch of our having to eat some crow. But we're going to go back and look at our over-under picks, figure out where we went wrong, where we went right, and talk about it. It should be a fun one. How are you feeling just about this year and how predictable it was in general?
Well, I mean, besides the horribleness of our best prediction, our biggest prediction, I think that a lot of it was about getting the contours right, but some of these were just really good lines, and so it was kind of like evaluating it. And you could see there's one in particular that I'll bring up where both sides of it were reasonable, we disagreed, and you know, it kind of went one way and then the other over the course of the year.
Yeah, there are still a bunch of these that are pretty close, and they definitely do a pretty good job. I think for us, the East in particular was really weird with all these teams that, you know, you've got this top four and then all the rest of these teams basically in between about 43 and 35 wins. Very difficult. And then I think also this year we've seen, at least since we've been doing this now, and I think this is our second year of doing it, saw a lot more tanking affecting some of these numbers late. And we tried to control for that early on in the process, but one team in particular, and we'll see whether that ends up affecting things or not. So let's just go in order through the conferences here, starting with the Atlanta Hawks, which are still up in the air. They're over under 43.5. I went under. My prediction for them was 43, so not very far under. Your prediction was over. This is one of the ones, the eight that you and I disagreed on. But not by much. Still up in the air here. They are projected by 538 at 42 wins. And
they would basically have to win out.
Yeah, they're 39 and 37 right now. So, and Paul Millsap, still no word that I've seen yet on his return. So looking like it's probably going to go under.
Millsap's injury really did create devastation on this one for me, because if he had been healthy, they would have picked up enough of these to get a little bit over, probably ended up around 44, 45. And that's the way it happens. You know, injuries, it hurts sometimes more with an over-under if it happens at the very end of the year, but it can happen at any point.
Yeah, it's hard for you to say bad beat, though, because their point differential was -1.3. So they actually really have kind of gotten really lucky in close games throughout the year. I mean, this team has probably been worse, I think, than either of us expected. It looked early on in the year when they got out to that 9-2 start that their defense was going to be a monster. And then the big worry for them was just they weren't going to be able to score. And that's really has been the biggest problem. And the defense declined from elite to merely good. And that's why, you know, I think that this team is, the other thing that we talked about too that didn't happen that we thought might happen that could have affected things was the possibility of a Millsap trade, some of their other free agents getting traded. That almost happened, frankly, probably, as we've said many times, probably should have happened, and it didn't, but they're still going to go under anyway, it looks like, most likely, and their fundamentals would support that.
Move on to Boston. Boston's was set at 51.5, and we both like the over. It's not definite yet, but it looks like they're going to hit. 538 projects them to have 53. I felt more comfortable with this than it ended up being, but I think that's just because I was so high on Boston. But they've had a wonderful year.
Yeah, it's interesting if you're gonna contrast Boston's performance to preseason expectations. They have had a wonderful year. You could also say that, hey, you know, Al Horford missed all this time. They were 500 after 25 games. Interesting too that these Brad Stevens teams, this has now been the third year in a row that they've started off much more poorly than they ended the year, in part due to the trades that they made 2 years ago to get Jarebko and Isaiah Thomas. But nonetheless, they haven't gotten there the way you thought. We thought it would be on the back of an elite defense. Instead, Isaiah Thomas has had this historic season that I don't think we saw. I mean, he was sort of playing at an all-star level, but they also really have outperformed their point differential as well, in part due to Thomas's nightly clutch heroics. So I think they are going to go over. We both thought they'd go over. I felt that this team, it would be possible that they could even get to 60 wins. And if they had defended all year the way we thought they could and had this offense, they might actually have gotten pretty close to there. But that didn't happen either. So this is one we got right. I'm not going to say, hey, we did such an amazing job on this one, though, because they didn't get there the way we thought that they would.
Right. And they also, one of the arguments that we had both talked about, and you mentioned this with previous trades, is we thought they could make a win now move, and they didn't really do that either. So they went under it with their existing talent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Over it with their existing talent. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, and we don't know for sure that they're going to get there, but they probably will. I mean, they're projected for 53. The over under was 51.5, and they're going to be trying the whole time. They'll probably be, I don't know exactly what their schedule is the rest of the way. I know they play Cleveland on Wednesday, but they're probably going to run into some teams that are resting or tanking or something. So you have to imagine that they're not going to just blow it. Let's get to one that was an interesting one for me. You and I were both quite vehement on this one. It was 20.5, Brooklyn, the lowest over under on the board. I actually predicted that they would get to 24 wins on my preview podcast. We both had the over. I actually put $15 on this over, and they are projected for 19, probably not going to get there. I don't know. You might have a better familiarity with their schedule than I do, though. How are they looking right now?
I think they have two more games against the Bulls, which is strangely intriguing now. But I think they're going to finish just under. They might win 20, which would be really tough in that way. But yeah, I mean, But the benefit that they have is, if they had won that game against Orlando, it would have helped. The benefit they have is that they have no reason to lose intentionally. They can just keep pushing, but I expect they'll probably
And Kenny Atkinson has said that, unlike last year, they will actually keep everyone active going forward. I think that they are intoxicated by this recent winning jag that saw them win, I think, 7 of their 19 of their 17 games so far in March.
Yeah, so their schedule left, they have Atlanta, Philly, Orlando, Chicago, Boston, Chicago. So maybe yeah, something they, like a split.
So they would have to go 4-2 to get to 21 wins and hit the over for us, though, huh?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, so that's that seems rather unlikely, even for this juggernaut since Jeremy Lin came back. And I mean, that was the thinking, was that they had no point guard last year. They brought in Jeremy Lin, and that was going to make a huge difference for him. And that thinking was correct, except for the fact that Jeremy Lin missed like 60 games. In the games that he played, they have performed very well. So I think had he even been healthy for 2/3 of the year, we probably would have gotten this one correct.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I liked our logic on that one. Our logic on this next team was, how shall we say, incorrect.
After loving Charlotte's over, was that last year, and getting it right?
Yeah, it was last year. They were like 40.5 last year or something.
Yeah, and went over.
No, they were like even lower than that last year. I think
it was like 37 or something.
No. Last year they were 32, and they ended up winning 46, and then they got no respect again this year. They actually started at 39.5, but by the time we actually did the show, had gone up to 42.5. Thank God I didn't put the best bet on there. If it had been 39.5, we would have. And 39.5, 42.5, both those are going to lose.
Yeah. A disappointing year for Charlotte. We found out that Cody Zeller was incredibly important. And even though Kemba Walker had that amazing start to the year, made the All-Star team, they're still, not going to make the playoffs. Well,
and it's not like he even has dropped off either. I mean, that's the thing, is that, Walker, there was a concern that, like, he was coming off this knee surgery, wouldn't be himself. He's been great, and Zeller was good. It's just their bench, and especially just their backup big man positions, have been so putrid. The trade for Marco Bellinelli, he's been okay, but it's hard to say that necessarily really shored things up. Hawes, Hibbert, like, both those guys are awful. They got traded for nothing. And then maybe if Plumlee had, number one, been the guy that they thought he was going to be when they traded for him, and number two, not immediately succumbed to a calf injury that's basically had him out the entire time since they acquired him, maybe they could have gotten into things. But I guess the one thing that we could say about Charlotte, though, when we're talking about, like, hey, we're so dumb, I mean, their point differential is projected to be plus 0.5 at the end of the year. So that's really right in line with the over there. I mean, they've just gotten very unlucky in close games, and their bench has sucked. So maybe actually we shouldn't be, as hard on ourselves for this one. But I mean, they are going to finish several games below the over.
Yeah.
Yes.
Chicago Bulls were at 38.5 I think we both liked the under, but thought it was a pretty good number just because their talent didn't mesh.
Yeah.
And they only need to win two games to go over, so it looks like they probably will, but it hasn't been locked in yet. They're projected to win 40.
Yeah, and they play, what, Philly twice and Brooklyn twice over the huge win against Atlanta yesterday, where they came back from 10 down with 5 minutes left. Jimmy Butler put the team on his back, as he has in so many games. And they also have slightly overperformed a negative point differential. I'm really annoyed though that they probably are going to go over, because I felt like our logic was totally sound on this one, and they've had some really inexplicable losses, although some inexplicable wins as well. You could actually make the argument that the Dwayne Wade injury actually might have like caused us to lose this one.
You could,
because I think they've been better without him, and now they're finally, and also like Rondo was exactly who we thought he was going to be early on, and then since he got put back in the starting lineup, he's been completely killing it. He's hitting all his threes, like having these 25 point games. Like, it's just this team, man. I know you've been actively rooting against them making the playoffs. It looks like that's probably not going to happen now. I don't know. I think I'm actually kind of interested to see them now, especially if they match up against Cleveland. Like that Jimmy Butler against LeBron, they swept the Cavs this year somehow 4-0. Like, I actually be interested to see it, and just to see if like Nikola Mirotic had like this unbelievable March. Like, maybe they'll actually be like kind of frisky. Like, they've been playing like a real like Fred Hoiberg style, really, probably for the first time since Wade went down.
I've enjoyed them more, even though they're still immensely frustrating the last week or so. But yeah, the reason I was rooting against them was just because I think they're the least interesting team of the ones at the bottom. And so, you know, I want to see the most interesting ones in. And also Milwaukee kind of firming up their place has changed a little bit for me, because they were the team that I thought was going to get knocked out if the Bulls went in. And when that changed, it took a little bit of the venom out of me. So I'm okay with it now. I still don't want it, but I'm more okay.
All right, we'll get to the Cleveland Cavaliers, one that we both got right momentarily. But first, this from Helix Sleep. This is the mattress that I sleep on every night, and my girlfriend found it. We actually, I think, were the first podcast that they ever advertised on, because when I was looking for sponsors initially, I actually DM'd their company Twitter account and said, hey, I love your product. Other mattress companies are advertising on podcasts. Do you want to try advertising on mine? Let's see how it goes. And that was 2 years ago, and they're still on the show. So a lot of our listeners have enjoyed their product as well. What makes them so special, better than some of the other mattress delivery companies that have kind of been a hot segment lately, is it's not one size fits all. I tried one of those other companies and I developed back problems nearly immediately. So I apparently did not fall into that one size fits all. But with Helix Sleep, you fill out a simple 2-3 questionnaire on their website, and they'll customize the mattress for your personal sleep profile. If you and your significant other have different profiles, you can actually get the mattress split down the middle. The firmness, how much heat is retained by the mattress. Those are just some of the factors that they consider. And they did a great job for me. I've been really comfortable. So I would highly encourage you to try it. And then they have this 100-day guarantee as well, where if you don't like it for whatever reason, they will actually allow you to return it within 100 days. You can really get a feel for whether it's good or not. So the way to get started with Helix Sleep, helixsleep.com/capspace. That's a URL, and we talk about capspace all the time on the program. That'll get you $50 off your order. helixsleep.com/capspace, again, is that URL. Let them know that you came from us. helixsleep.com/capspace. The Cleveland Cavaliers look to go under their mark of 56.5.
I think this was one where you had really good logic and it ended up working out. I mean, there was certainly a chance they were going to go over.
Yeah, for once, right?
Yeah, the idea that they weren't going to push that hard, that there were some issues with the way that, you know, the team was going to work out. I don't think we expected, you know, the injuries that they had to deal with at moments of the season, but it worked out.
Well, hold on. Oh, I mean, I guess K-Love missed, he really only missed 4 weeks, right? And then Irving, who had been injured basically his entire career until now, has missed like a few games due to rest.
I was thinking of JR personally.
Yeah, I mean, some of their support players, they definitely have had some issues, and we worried about their defense. We worried about their motivation. We also worried about them not getting pushed at all. As it turns out, they actually are getting pushed by Boston, but more just because they've really fallen back to the pack so much. And I think not only that are they at 52 wins, but really, I mean, what is their point differential going to end up at here? Like they were really outperforming that in close games for a while. I mean, they're going to be 3.2 point differential by the end of the year is the projection.
Wow.
I mean, pretty amazing too. I mean, I don't buy buy this for a second, but given the way that they've actually performed on the court, they are given 2% title odds now by 538. Pretty amazing. Only a 39% chance of getting the top seed. And in fact, it almost certainly the East winner this year, it's probably going to be 53 wins, maybe 54. I think that is the lowest amount that a top seed has had since, I want to say, 2007, the Pistons were like 53 wins or something that ended up losing to LeBron's Cavs team in that epic 07 East Finals. And then I think you would have to go back to like those Nets teams that made back-to-back finals that were, you know, 49 wins, like low 50s, to get to where a conference winner has had this low of a win total.
You could do a retro podcast with Dan Feldman on that one of the games in the 07 East Finals.
Well, I can't do that to him because I already made him sit with me through that incredibly painful loss in the 88 Finals. So I think
that's true.
Yeah, probably would have to bring someone who's like a Cavs expert on for that one if we're going to be fair.
Well, and since we're already talking about the Pistons, we can go on to them. The Pistons, the over-under was set at 45.5, which was, in our opinion, a really good line. You went under and I went over, and I think this was my worst call for a very simple reason, which was the pathway for them to go way over this number was very narrow, and their pathway to go under was a lot wider. Usually that leads to me being risk averse and taking the wider path, but there were two teams, them and the New Orleans Pelicans, where I just believed in their coach. I believed in the kind of what they were doing, not the coach for New Orleans, but I believed in that, and I was just completely wrong.
Well, did we know about the Reggie Jackson injury when we did this? I think we did, right? Like that came out.
I think we did. I'm not completely sure, but I think we did.
That might actually not have come out until after this. I think that came out in like mid-October, and they're like, yeah, it's gonna be 6 to 8 weeks. So because we did this on, I think, October 1st is when we did this, maybe a little bit after that. But for me, I mean, I predicted 45, so it's not like I was like, oh yeah, they're gonna be way under. And until this recent swoon, they actually were like still close to being projected for 500. And the thought was they were 43 wins last year. They were, you know, nothing in their fundamentals made that fluky. And then this whole team was young. They picked up some additional depth in the offseason. Why wouldn't they just improve a little bit and get better? I had them improving some. I was just like a little conservative because, as you said, you know, they didn't really have that high end star talent that you generally are going to need to get into like the high 40s, low 50s. But I'm still surprised that they performed as poorly as they have. I mean, even to the point where we've talked about this before and people are like, oh, should the Pistons blow it up? I'm like, nah, you know what? Like, I'm not going to go there yet. Like, Reggie Jackson was injured all year, just as a shell of himself. You know, maybe they still can get more out of this talent going forward.
Yeah, it's a disappointing year, and I wonder where they're going to go this summer. They're actually the team that I would say is the most intriguing because of the combination of coach GM. I think that gives them a little bit more volatility to maybe do something bigger. So we'll see.
Nonetheless, though, continuing a theme on ones that we disagreed on, I'm going to be right, and you probably are not going to be right.
I'm glaring at my monitor right now, but you're right.
All right, let's get to the Pacers.
Pacers, a lot like the Cavs, where we just thought the number was a little bit high, thought that it was a little bit over there. So 43.5, we both said under. They're going to go a little bit under.
Yeah, another team with kind of this weird recent swoon, you know, leading to some of those Paul George comments about being unhappy. So I think, again, this is one where I thought the line was probably a couple of games too high. And I think people were just seduced by the Larry Bird points per game brigade, underrated the decline in their defense. And I think you and I have discussed this before on the 15 and 60, where we felt like Indiana might be the team that most hewed to what we thought they were going to be this season. And, I feel pretty good about getting this. I mean, they're probably, you know, right around average in offense and defense. We thought that their bench could be a problem. That's been the case as well. Yeah, I mean, not much more to say on this one. This is one of the few that really kind of went according to plan.
Yay. One that changed so much over the course of this year, Miami. It was set at 36.5, and then I think it dropped to 34.5. And
yeah, after the Bosch news in late September.
Right. So we knew that when it went in. And you said you went over, I went under. For the first half of the year, I looked right. And then they just rattled off that ridiculous run. And who knows if that's going to continue, if they're actually going to make the playoffs. But either way, you're going to get this right.
Well, Yeah, I was pissed off because they were had such a good point differential and they just kept losing. And I was like all set for to be like, oh, you know, my process really was right. And, you know, they just got unlucky and blah, blah. And then they won, like, you know, went on this like 30-10 run or whatever they've been on now. So that one, I mean, and I can't quite take credit because the formula in some respects, at least defensively, has been about what I expected. But we mentioned when we talked about their game against Detroit that they set a team record for three-pointers. No way I saw that coming. You know, I mean, I thought that they were just going to be, you know, scrape by, maybe get semi-close to 500 by having like a top five defense, and their defense has been great. But the two players I thought really were going to be important to that were Justice Winslow and Josh Richardson. Richardson had tore his MCL, was never really right all year. He's finally getting back to being good now. And then Justice Winslow basically has been out since the beginning of December. So I thought those were going to be the players. The formula's kind of been the same. And then this three-point bombing, I mean, you just did not see it at all, the way they've pushed the pace. Goran Dragic's unbelievable season. I mean, and you've just, I think they've also kind of gotten lucky on some of these threes. I mean, like Goran Dragic hitting 44% on three-pointers this season, like when he shot 31% last year on easier attempts, like no one saw that coming. So I feel pretty good about it because I kind of had just this belief in Miami's system and some of their young talent blossoming. But, you know, I didn't see Deion Waiters being this good or James Johnson, who was, you know, 40 pounds heavier in Toronto. So I can't quite take as much credit as I would like to on this one, but I'll still take some.
You could take some. one that we can't take any credit for. Well, we can take credit for getting it really, really wrong. We both our best bet on the board after the Chris Middleton news, because we knew that beforehand, was that Milwaukee would go under. It was originally at 39.5. It went to 38.5. We both threw a lot of our fake money on it, and Bucks won.
So, yeah, we got the Chris Middleton news a couple of days before this. I think it was like late September. And I was actually visiting a buddy of mine in London where they have these sports books kind of everywhere, but they also have like no idea what the NBA is. And so I went in to go and see if I could find this line because it was off the board publicly, you know, on some of the websites. And I went in, the guy was like, Milwaukee Bucks. And I was like, yeah, you know, it's right here. And he had to like actually call in and get the line. And it was 38.5. And I was like, oh, maybe they just don't know like what we're talking about here. Like no one's paying attention like to this clearly. Like they had to call in and get the line and write it down on a piece of paper for me. You know, this is a steal, this 38.5, like this is going to go way down. I think afterwards it did. There were probably like 33, 40, 34 later on. So I was like, oh yeah, this is just incredible that we got this line. And we both now lost, even with a couple weeks left of the season still.
A great season for them. What we didn't see coming was Giannis becoming an All-NBA guy this quickly. I think that's probably the biggest thing. And also, you know, Middleton coming back and being a really important part of their success, but they would have been probably close-ish to this anyway.
Well, and also Jabari was a lot better than maybe we True. Thought he would be as well. Greg Monroe has, I think,
Brogdon.
Been better.
We should bring up Brogdon.
Oh, Brogdon. Yeah, that. I mean, a second round rookie. No one thought that anything was going to happen with him. So yeah,
kudos to the Bucks. I mean, that's really impressive to completely blow through a number like that. And then of course, when it dropped, they were by that like a couple weeks ago. But
truthfully, I don't feel that bad about this one though.
No, because, I don't either.
I mean, it's just there's a lot of stuff that happened with them that would be very, very difficult to predict. I mean, they're even getting like minutes out of Jason Terry. Michael Beasley has been like giving them some really good scoring off the, like he's been like a solid player. They really won that Tyler Ennis Michael Beasley trade. Like, I mean, just so many people have outperformed expectations for this team, and also like their bench has been a lot better. I mean, that's one thing that we thought might be the case, but I mean, yeah, especially Giannis like getting to like, you know, a top 10 top 15 player in the league level, I think nobody saw that coming whatsoever. So again, I think one that we did see coming, the New York Knickerbockers, 38.5, the under is now solidified.
It is. The Knicks, it was a lot of kind of downside potential, especially with the idea of potentially, you know, tanking towards the end of the year. And no, there were some moments where they looked good, but this number felt a couple games too high to me, which happens a lot because you have to remember Vegas is not only setting over-unders based on, you know, where they think it's going to be, it's where they can get betting on both sides. So with some big market teams like the Bulls, the Lakers, the number gets inflated a little bit because fans of those teams are optimistic.
Yeah, I had predicted 37 on the preview pod that I did with Jason Concepcion and Jared Dubin. So they didn't even necessarily get to there, although they've kind of shut some guys down a little bit recently. And this team was 16-13. Everyone was all excited about them. But, you know, even at that point, they were well outperforming their point differential. They fell back to earth very quickly. Then, I mean, it's interesting. I think they've gotten probably more out of Derrick Rose this season than they necessarily had a right to expect, at least offensively. He's been horrendous defensively. But, you know, he's had a pretty healthy year. Porzingis started off incredibly well, and then he kind of dropped off. He had some injury concerns. And Carmelo Anthony, I mean, one of the reasons that I had the under was I felt that Carmelo was just going to continue his gentle decline. That's been the case. We thought that I guess part of why I had them at 37 was I actually thought their defense could be okay. I thought that, like, Noah and Porzingis could actually be like a good front court. And then Noah was even, because I thought Noah had at least performed well defensively the year before, and it turned out he wasn't even good defensively anymore. And then, you know, we went down with that knee injury. He struggled with that hamstring injury in camp, never really got into shape, and now he's suspended for PDs. I mean, they really, of all the players on this team, maybe you could say that, like, Rose a little bit offensively, Hernan Gomez, and maybe like Ron Baker are those probably the only ones that actually outperformed expectations. Am I missing anybody?
Kuzminskas.
Okay. Yeah. Kuzminskas has been like a little better shooter, but he's been in and out of the rotation, of course, hasn't been like that big of a piece. They also, I think, have missed Lance Thomas during like his various maladies that he suffered.
Would you say Jeff Hornacek has been below expectations? I would.
Well, I mean, Jeff Hornacek plus the meddling fingers of Phil Jackson has been below expectations.
Right. And that's what I mean. I hoped that he was going to have a little bit more autonomy, because remember, the choice was kind of him or Rambis. And the idea was like, oh, Hornacek's going to get a little bit more ability to do what he wants to do. And he's probably had a little bit more, but not that much.
Yeah, he did. And then now it's back to the triangle and everyone's carping about that. So, you know, I think there are also certain organizations that you're probably just, when in doubt, take the under. And the Knicks certainly fall into that category for me.
One that might end up in that category, the Orlando Magic. The Magic, you said it was the hardest on the board. I had bought into the idea that they had enough defensive talent. While I didn't like their roster at the time, we complained ad nauseum about the way that Aaron Gordon was going to play the three, I thought that at least they could defend. And when the line is 36.5, I thought if they have like a top 10 defense, they could end up going over that. I went over. I think you did as well. And No.
Yeah, my logic, as I recall it, was they had like the point differential of like a 35 or 36 win team. Their line was 36.5. I thought that Biombo, who was excellent in the playoffs last year defensively, would really help. Gordon defensively at the three. Serge Ibaka, Elfrid Payton could take a step forward defensively. And I mean, just as I've said, like before, Orlando having a bad defense, and, you know, Frank Vogel is a good coach too. Orlando having a really bad defense was the most surprising single unit performance really of any team as offense or defense to me that I could recall. And so they're not even going to get close to this. They're projected at 29 wins. It's already lost. So yeah. And I had kept picking Orlando for unders, as I did last year. I got burned on that, and now I picked them for over, not very much over, but over, and not even close as well this year. So interesting to see what happens to them. I think Biombo's defense has been really disappointing for me, and seeing him in person, you know, just talking to people around the organization too. I mean, I think they felt like they're going to get that player who played in the playoffs last year defensively. I mean, offensively, you know, he's not going to be any good, but just he hasn't really had much effect on defense.
Yeah, they've been a big disappointment. And I think we can move on though to the Sixers. The Sixers, when I listened to part of the podcast we did on them, I think we basically just took it off the board because of what happened to Ben Simmons. I think that happened like right before we were going to record, but we both went under the original projection of 27.5. I kind of hedged and went over 24, but I feel like we can
I think that's actually where it ended up being. It was like right around 24. I think what we tried to do is project where it would be and then go over or under or something. I can't remember, but yeah. Suffice to say, we end up being wrong about them.
Right. And I think that it's not fair. Like I said, over 24, I don't think it's fair to give credit for that. But they've had an intriguing year. They were quite good when Joel Embiid was on the floor. And then they've been feisty after that. Šarić has helped and they've been playing all right. So, yeah, I don't think we need to talk too much about it, but they've definitely surpassed expectations overall.
Well, I think we should at least give them a little bit more credit because, you know, to get to 31 wins, if you would say, hey, how's this going to happen? It would have been, all right, Ben Simmons is going to come back and he's going to be awesome and Embiid's going to play all year. He's going to be awesome. And Embiid played 31 games. And granted, they had a pretty nice record in those 31 games. But, you know, some of these other guys on this team really need to get some more credit too. You mentioned Šarić. TJ McConnell is very limited as a shot creator, but, you know, the on-off data has always been impressed by him. Their defense. Where are they in defense right now? Oh, here, I've got it. 14th ranked defense in the NBA. And they are going to end up with a net rating, you know, right around, you know, below -5. So they've outperformed their point differential a little bit. That, of course, a departure from past years when they were way below their point differential, you know, especially last year when they got to only 10 wins. But pretty impressive for Philly. But I think they're going to be one of the hardest teams to project next year, I think. With Simmons, we have no idea what we're going to get from him, no idea what we'll get from Embiid in terms of health. They'll get to around 30 wins this year, but that's outperforming their point differential. Šarić, how much is he going to play? How much of what he's done the rest of the year is real? They're going to have probably two prize rookies coming in as well. I mean, maybe they'll even bring in over Furkan Korkmaz. They'll have a TLC, Justin Anderson. Like, it's going to be impossible to figure out. Like, they'll probably have the widest range of predictions of any team next year.
They very well could, and it'll be fun to see that at that time. Ready to move on to Toronto?
Indeed. This is one that we disagreed on, and it is going to go right down to the wire.
The line was set at 49.5. You thought it was going to be 49. I thought it was going to be a little bit over. It looked great before Lowry got hurt, but they've held on pretty firm, and they need to go 4-2, I believe, for the rest of the season in order to hit the over, but I certainly think that's possible.
Yeah, and they're going to be trying to get positioning, but it's going to be real interesting between Toronto and Washington. I mean, each of them, in Washington projected at 49, Toronto at 50 right now. That, do you want to be the 3 seed or do you want to be the 4 seed? Because you're going to be kind of like dancing around a little, like, weird game theory here with whether Cleveland is going to be two or one.
Do you know who has Cleveland in the last game of the year?
One of Toronto or Washington?
Toronto does. So that could be, I mean, that could be an all-timer in terms of assigning your own fate.
Yeah, for both teams as well, even. I mean, maybe Cleveland has a preference between Toronto and Washington. I would actually guess, given the history, that they would probably rather play Toronto because they've had success against them. But this is really a much different Toronto team. Top five defense since the All-Star break, acquiring Tucker and acquiring Ibaka. So yeah, that'll be interesting. I mean, in terms of their performance, I certainly didn't expect them to be, you know, one of the greatest offenses ever through like the first month and a half, 2 months of the season. But when you consider that Lowry has missed as much time as he has, I mean, if they hadn't made the trades for Ibaka and Tucker, this probably would almost certainly been under. But Toronto, I mean, best point differential in the East, they're going to end up there. They had really had a really hard early schedule that they did okay against, and it looked like they're projected to be the number one seed for a while because their closing schedule the last couple 3 months was easy, and then Lowry went down and they started playing a lot worse in January. Kind of different for this team that they had this great offense and that dropped off, and now they have this great defense, and I don't think that either of us anticipated that at times during the year they would get to that level.
That's a good point. And I think this could end up being a very challenging line next year, but we have no real idea what the team's going to look like, so it's hard to say definitively.
Yeah, so what are their chances here? I mean, they are right now at, oh, they're already at 40.
They're 46 and 30 right now.
46 and 30. Okay, yeah.
So I'll give you their schedule. So they need to go 4 out of 6, and they host the Sixers on Sunday. So most people have heard that result. At the Pacers, at the Pistons on a back-to-back, then host Miami, at the Knicks, at the Cavs.
Interesting. So they're probably favored in 5 of their 6 games, but you know those road games against the Pacers and the Pistons won't necessarily be pushers. Although the Pistons will probably be in tank mode by then, so that might be an easier game. The Pacers are actually out of the playoff picture as we record this, so they will be that'll be an interesting game as well.
The Washington Wizards, a team that burned you so effusively last year. The line was set at 42.5. You went just under. I went over. And in one of the rare times we disagreed, and I got it right.
Rare as in only?
No, there's another one, and it's actually going to be the next one we do.
Oh, wait a minute. No, I had the under on Dallas.
Oh.
Why'd you say we disagreed on that?
I thought we did. Anyway, we'll get there when we get there.
All right. sorry to go ahead. But yeah, it's interesting. I thought I liked Washington's talent still. And the only reason that I went with the under and predicted 41, although I did have them in the playoffs, was because I thought they were going to struggle with injuries. I mean, Bradley Beal's history, John Wall coming back from surgery on both knees. Jan Mahimi didn't have the greatest health history. Otto Porter has missed a lot of time in his career. Their depth, we were really concerned about that, other than Mahimi. And I don't think Mahimi actually had been shut down at the time that we had recorded. I think that happened in like mid-October, as I recall. But that was kind of my thinking. That obviously was incorrect. And I think the other thing I might have underrated as well is that I think Scott Brooks has done a wonderful job coaching them, that they have really... he's fixed a lot of the things that kind of plagued him. Orthodoxy as far as like always playing two bigs, not shooting enough three pointers, that kind of stuff. I think more like creativity with his lineups. We've seen a lot of that in Washington, which we didn't necessarily in OKC. So impressive that he's really, I think, been able to learn and evolve as time has gone on. The other thing I could say though here with Washington is they have been one of the best clutch teams. John Wall has been unbelievable in the clutch. But if you look at their point differential and then assume that they had slightly worse health, you know, it could have been right around that 42.5 over under, but you know, of course, that's not how things worked out.
Something that's been surprising for me about Brooks is that I expected the change from Whitman to Brooks to be partially about buying in on defense. Brooks did not get enough credit for those Oklahoma City teams, just even from the Stars on down, just generally buying in and playing hard defense. So I thought they would get a more significant bump there. But the change that I've seen more wholesale with the starting five has been they have a way more cohesive offense and they've looked a lot better. And some of that is going from Whitman's disaster to Brooks is different. But as you said, he deserves a lot of credit.
All right. Well, we will sort out this high drama with our Dallas Mavericks predictions in a moment. But first, this from Indochino. I was lucky enough to be asked to be the officiant at my friend's wedding last night. And so I wanted to wear my best suit, and my best suit is an Indochino suit. And the reason it's my best suit is it's easy to get a perfectly tailored suit at an incredible price by them. As kind of a tall guy, a little oddly shaped, off the rack suits were always just a big problem for me. First, you'd have to thumb through, find one that you liked, and not only one that I liked, but then it would have to be, you know, a 44 tall. And then a 44 tall didn't really fit me because I had these big shoulders. So they would have to really get me a 46 tall instead, and then try to like cinch it up around the chest so it actually like fit properly. And, you know, it never really just quite worked. Same thing with the pants, because with that big of a suit jacket, they would always give you like these pants that had too big of a waist. I'm like, oh yeah, well, we'll just tailor those up for you. And like, all right, you know, you're doing a nice job there. I'll see you in 2 weeks after you've tailored it. And it was always fine, but I never knew what I was missing until I tried an Indochino suit. I went into one of their North American showrooms here in San Francisco. They've got 8 other ones. And if you can't do that, you can also go onto their website. They have an easy tutorial to take 14 different measurements for your suit. 3 or 4 weeks later, your perfectly tailored suit arrives. And the best thing about Indochino, other than the fit, is that if you're going into a department store, you're just kind of whatever fabric they have there, you got to pick one out. Here, you can choose from over 100 different fabrics. You can customize the lapels. You can customize single-breasted, double-breasted, pleats, no pleats, the angle of the pockets, the lining. You can get it monogrammed. You can make it your suit. If you go into a department store, it's not your suit. And your suit with Indochino is far, far less expensive than really any other suit that you're going to buy out of a store. Right now, my listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $389 at Indochino.com when entering that familiar Capspace code at checkout. Capspace is easy to remember because we talk about it all the time on the program. Shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code CAPSPACE for any premium suit, just $389 with free shipping. Get ready to look like $1 million. So you were kind enough before this to go through and log what we all had. I think we or put it in on the sheet as well. So you had me logged as the under, and I thought I did the under on the Dallas Mavericks at 39.5. I didn't have any reason to think that they would be better than that. I hope, at least. And then you marked it as wrong for me. But
it's very confusing because I don't remember. So with a lot of them, the disagree was already marked in. So I don't know if I just misread it and then just automatically did the rest of it by mistake, or whether something else happened, or the disagree was already in there, and so I inferred because I knew that I picked the under. So anyway, whatever happened, this one I got wrong, not by predicting it incorrectly, but somehow it got logged incorrectly. So we both got this one right.
Yeah, 39.5 seemed too high for the Mavs. They had a lot of question marks coming in, and you'll recall, I mean, these guys that have played for this team now, Yogi Ferrell wasn't on the team, Dorian Finney-Smith we'd never heard of. We thought that Justin Anderson might be a part of the rotation. He got traded away for Nerlens Noel. Dirk Nowitzki was going to be a year older. Deron Williams. I mean, the biggest reason that I was really worried about them was injuries. And I think that certainly early in the year turned out to be right. Dirk really wasn't right for almost 2.5 months. And when he did play, that they were really bad. Andrew Bogut, we thought, was going to maybe help them, but it turned out that he and Dirk were just way too slow together. Bogut, of course, missed a bunch of times with injuries and was eventually traded and subsequently released and then signed by buyout, and then played like he played like 50 seconds or something for the Cavs and then got injured again. So it was really a lost year for Dallas. They started 4-17, admirably fought back to being on the very fringes of playoff contention in what's been a pretty down year for the East, for the West last seed. And, I think we're just kind of right about this one. Old team, no reason to think they'd be better. I mean, the interesting thing is that Harrison Barnes has been way better than any of us expected, and still they've kind of disappointed. I think you feel better probably about the Mavs' future than you might have before. Seth Curry, also, we thought he'd be pretty good, but he's exceeded expectations. So it's been a weird year for them, but I think they have a better foundation. I mean, not a great one, but a better foundation going forward now with Noel, Barnes, Curry, Yogi Ferrell, like some actual real youngish players that can be a part of the team for a while. And they might be better off without those guys, so they could just tank, but they have more young talent than it seemed like they did at the start of the year.
There are reasons for optimism despite them going under this by significantly. You brought up most of them, and Rick Carlisle is still a great coach, so I think that they can make this work. Though I do wonder with them about, I understand why they pushed for it and why they did everything. Just they are, considering how much trouble they've had getting high end free agents over the last couple of years. They've swung and missed, including swinging, hitting, and having it be like robbed at the fence, I guess would probably be the best analogy for DeAndre. Whether they like going full bore and trying to get that star through the draft might have been better long term, but I understand why that didn't happen.
The Denver Nuggets, 34.5. You and I both had the over. I predicted 37 on my preview podcast with Adam Morris. And by the way, if you missed it, he and I went for about 48 minutes on his Locked On Nuggets show, which was a really enjoyable conversation for me. So go back and check that out as kind of a post-mortem on the Nuggets season and how we feel about some of their players going forward. This one, I think this is one that we actually kind of just about got right. We thought that their offense would be good. We thought Jokic would be good. He's even exceeded expectations a little bit. I think actually maybe some of their injuries have been underrated, and that their ability to get past, they've always had Fareed or Gallo or Wilson Chandler has always seemed like they've been out of the lineup. Moutier missed a bunch of time, and now he's not in the rotation anymore. So that's they've had a great offense, they've had a bad defense, probably more extreme in both directions there, but this is one of the ones that some of the advanced statistics RPM projections really liked as terms of an over, and you and I were both in agreement.
I actually cited RPM and I think Kevin Pelton when I picked that as putting 10-10 of my fake dollars on it, and I felt comfortable with the Nuggets. I thought I knew what they were, and thought I just felt the line was too low, and they didn't get everything they wanted out of the season, especially considering how the bottom of the West playoff picture kind of came to them, but still a success of a season. And remember, early on they were dealing with this massive trouble playing Jusuf Nurkić and Jokic together, and they didn't unlock everything until they separated those two and made it work. So that's another reason to be very optimistic about what they could be next year, now now that they have a lot of this stuff sorted out.
Yeah, I talked about with Maris, actually, that I think next year might be more of a consolidation year for them than people might think, especially if Gallo were to leave, and then they probably would trade Wilson Chandler as well. But we'll see what happens with them. Golden State, 66.5. They were on pace for some time to go over this by a couple of games. Then Kevin Durant got hurt, and what did they had like a 2-5 stretch or a 2-4 stretch or something like that.
I think it was 3-5, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, finishing up that crazy road trip, they rested in San Antonio, and then of course famously have not lost since then. I actually thought they were going to get to 70 this year. I think actually if they had just played better in close games, they would have gotten there. People forget that they were like really bad in close games early on after they had been one of the best clutch teams ever. But still projected by 538 for 67, they could lose one more time and still get there.
They need to go 5-1, and they should be the favorites in all of their remaining games. They only have one more on the road, and that's against the Suns. But the big question will be if they clinch, and they probably will, the number one seed before that, how will they approach that in terms of rest? There are some of their games, like against the Lakers on the last day of the season, they could win it even without their best guys. But so,
dude,
you know,
so Steve Kerr and Jaren Collins could get out there and they could win that last game of the season against the Tankers.
That's how they should resolve that game. They should just, the last game of the year, like, it should be Kevin Durant and then all the coaching staffs for both teams.
Let Luke Walton get out there, run up and down a little bit. He stays in shape for a young coach. I guess really the only game that you would look at that they seems like it might be a loss for them against, I mean, I guess Minnesota will come in and they'll probably try. And then Utah is going to be fighting against the Clippers when they come in on the Monday before the end of the season. So those are the only two games I would think that they are at much risk of losing, unless I'm forgetting one.
They could lose to the Wizards on Sunday.
Ah, yes, that's right. That's possible. But I don't think, it sounds like they're probably not going to rest anyone for that game. We haven't heard anything about that yet. So
right, yeah. it'll go down to the wire just because it has to, unless they lose a couple games early. So it'll be worth watching.
Houston, this is one that we were both pretty confident in the over. This was an insanely low over under at 41.5. I mean, but remember, they only won 41 last year, and in theory they were losing Dwight Howard, but they couldn't stop anyone last year anyway. And I think as time went on and we really started thinking about it, we felt like they could be better. But the big issue too, that has not been even the slightest issue until very recently, was health with Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon. And then, you know, they still had Corey Brewer. They didn't really have any kind of depth off the bench. Remember, they didn't have Lou Williams at the start of the year. And also Sam Decker hadn't played at all last year, right? Like, we didn't know that he was going to be a solid combo forward, hit some threes and defend off the bench either. So we thought that their bench, especially if Gordon and Anderson couldn't play that much, and Patrick Beverley also, you remember, I don't think this had come out at the time, but always an injury risk. He had that knee surgery early on in the year that he came back from super quickly. So it's like, oh, I can't believe these guys are only 41.5. I mean, it wasn't completely insane. I did predict that they're going to win 46. I think Rahat Hook, even when I had him on my show for the pod, thought they would be even higher. And you and I did both end up putting some money on this over, you more than I did. And I think that's why you're actually going to end up beating me in our yearly bets.
It certainly wasn't putting more money on the Bucks than you did that helped that out. So,
yeah, I mean, anything else you want to say just in general about Houston's season?
Yeah. So the reason I didn't like their number was because I thought it priced in what was really a worst case scenario year and kind of treated that as the expectation. Whereas I thought last year was the aberration, especially considering 2 years ago they finished second in the West, and they've gotten success all over. The one place they had depth was at center. I think they've looked good there. Capella's having the best year of his career. Nene's been solid, and Montrezl Harrell has helped out when they needed him. And yeah, I mean, they're a very, very good team. And we've talked about it before that they're also lots of reasons, assuming that they can stay healthy, especially Harden next year, that they could be a very, very good regular season team and hopefully in the playoffs next year as well.
Yeah, Harden also has outperformed expectations. You mentioned that on your podcast with Arturo Galletti that you had both suggested maybe James Harden as a dark horse MVP candidate at the start of the year, and that obviously is looking pretty good right now. And Harden didn't have his best year last year either, especially early in the year. He sprained his ankle. He came in out of shape. He's in much better shape this year. You know, Lee Jenkins wrote an article about how he's you know, had kind of embraced his celebrity for a short time and now got away from that and just went back to basketball, and that's really helped him. So good to see you with the Rockets.
Now to another one that we disagreed on, the Los Angeles Clippers. They're number 53.5. What was your thinking in going over here? I had the under.
They have a lot of talent. Their starting five was and is very good when they're all healthy. And I didn't think they were going to stay healthy the whole time, but I thought that was enough to propel them. And they had, you know, enough pieces on their bench to stay competitive. And early on the season, not only were they absolutely annihilating it, but they were succeeding in exactly the ways that I expected. The bench eventually fell off. They also, you know, had missed time with Chris Paul getting injured, Blake Griffin missing some time. DeAndre Jordan's still a robot, so that's okay. So I thought I was uncomfortable with the over because I thought that, you know, I didn't think they were going to be like a 65 win team or anything like that. But I also thought that, you know, this was that my expectation was about 55. So if you think they're going to win 55 games, you can go over.
Yeah. And I think my thinking was just entirely based on injuries and what I saw as a lack of depth. And Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, both of them have missed significant time this year. When they started 10-1 and 14-2, I was like, oh, well, I guess we got this one wrong. But then, of course, the injuries hit shortly thereafter.
Is there anything else that you want to really talk about now with them? I mean, Ben Golver and I on Real Jam Radio talked a little bit about their offseason and how fascinated we are by it, but I think we'll have time to talk about that later on.
Yeah, I don't think so. It seems pretty clear. I guess you could say that they also now have been playing worse even with their full team necessarily than a 54-win pace, 53.5 wins. But, you know, they played better beforehand, and this was a team that was together. I mean, we talked about how if they stayed healthy, they had all these seasons in the mid-50s before this, that maybe if they did stay fully healthy, they could in theory get to 60, and it looked like they might get there. I mean, we just have completely forgotten about how they had maybe the absolute best 10-game start in NBA history and then just have completely fallen off. A lot of that was just due to luck in terms of opponent missing jump shots and the bench overperforming. But nonetheless, I think this was just one of those ones where it's not that sexy to just kind of bet on injuries. Because, like with Washington, I kind of did and they didn't happen. And so then you can look kind of dumb. But in this one, I bet on injuries and it worked out.
We didn't bet on injuries, but I would say you could make an argument along with the Pacers that the Lakers were the pick that we got the most right, just top to bottom, because the idea was that their talent was a little bit weaker than some thought, and that there was this gigantic incentive, if we were right on that part of it, that they were going to be on the softer side to tank at the end of the year. And that's why they haven't clinched going under yet, because it was at 24.5, but they are going to go under.
They're tanking?
Allegedly.
Yeah, this is another one of those ones where they started 10-10, and, you know, their defense was still pretty bad during that period, but you're thinking, oh, maybe this is it's looking pretty good for them. And then just, you know, since then they are 11-45 and worst point differential in the league is what they're projected for, -7.7, and they are projected for 23 wins. I don't know where these two other wins that they're going to get are going to come from, frankly, because as you mentioned, they are not trying very hard. And so, yeah, I think this is one where our logic ended up being pretty good. And this is another one of those ones where over these last few years, their over-under has gotten lower every year, but we still were like, you know what, count on the tanking and count on just, you know, this has not been a good organization. When in doubt, let's put our bet on those factors.
Again, like the Clippers, I think we could talk about their offseason, but we don't need to right now. So let's move on to the Memphis Grizzlies. The Grizzlies line was set at 43.5. They already have 42 wins, so they would have to go, I think, 1-5 to not get this. And they're playing the Lakers on Sunday, so when most people listen to this, they probably will have already won the one game they can win. But I'm still not ready to concede it, just because with Marc Gasol still out, you never really know. But they're probably going to go over.
Yeah, it's looking that way. And the reason that you and I both went under was, again, injuries. Gasol, up until this point, has played nearly the entire season. Mike Conley, coming off his Achilles, there is some concern. And other than that transverse process back fracture, which he came back from incredibly somehow within 2 weeks, everyone's forgotten that he just picked up right where he left off, too, after a couple of bad games. You know, his season has been unbelievable. They've gotten more out of some of their bench brigade guys, as well, guys like Jermichael
Green, James Ennis, Vince Carter has had a renaissance, and that's made up for the fact that Chandler Parsons has been, not only has he rarely played, but when he was out there, he might have had the worst season of any player in the NBA this year. He shot like 34% overall and like under 30% on threes, and you know, his defense wasn't making up for it either. So with all that, where are they in relation to their point differential? I think they're pretty much right in line this year, right? It's turned out, like, they were way ahead, and now I think that it's actually regressed a little bit.
So they're projected to be plus 1.1. So I think they're ahead of it, but not by that much.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much right in line with the 46 wins they're projected for. And I agree with you, they might not make it to 46 with Gasol still being out with that left foot strain. Which it sounds like from some of David Fizdale's comments that actually was something that was really bothering him. So we'll see. I mean, you never want to say that a Memphis injury is a little thing that's going to get taken care of, because that has not been the history.
It has not. We can move on to the Timberwolves. Their line was set at 41.5, which was on the high side. I was a believer in Tom Thibodeau being able to reform their defense and coax this young team that had a nice close to last year into something resembling a low-end playoff team. And there were moments in this year where that looked right, but not enough moments for it to get close to hitting the over.
Yeah, that's right. And really, their point differential has been about that of a 500 team. They would have been right in the mix for there if they hadn't, again, as they always seem to, underperformed that point differential. And the defense was horrendous in the beginning of the year. They still overall on the season are ranked 25th, but they were really, like, you know, close to last in the league before that. But the offense has been incredible. They've had the 10th ranked offense and the 25th ranked defense. So overall, that's kind of right in line with where they were. I actually had them making the playoffs with 40 wins as the last seed. So it's I didn't expect that they would be this bad. So, you know, I think this season has been, if you really, the only assumption that I think people got wrong, maybe we got wrong, was the idea that they were going to have this really good defense right away. And that's been a very incremental process for Coach Tibbs.
There's an argument to be made that one of the biggest successes of this season was not trading Ricky Rubio at the deadline. He's been spectacular since that point. I can't go into Tibbs' mind to see if that will carry over, if he will stay on the team long term, but he's looked great to me, and we haven't talked about that enough because we haven't been doing as much on the Timberwolves once they got kind of out of the playoff mix.
Yeah, well, I think I would bet you that just in terms of, like, gamer episodes, they've been, like, in the top five of teams that we've done, like, a gamer on this year, but maybe not as many, you know, as you mentioned, since they got out of contention. But yeah, negative 0.4 net rating for the Wolves. So that would be, you know, 39 win type of team, you know, 40 win type of team. So this would have been a lot closer if they hadn't underperformed their point differential. But, you know, I wasn't ready to believe yet that Tibbs could just have this enormous effect, like, you know, getting this team up into like 45, 50 wins, like solid playoff contention. Yet and it, you know, I think that was right in line with what happened.
You talked about the Sixers as having a really tough line for next year. I think the Wolves might have the toughest line, but it's also possible that Vegas is going to really buy into it. I don't know, we'll see.
Yeah, well, we'll see who they get in free agency too. They're going to have max space. I think if they can get someone who just, we know, is going to be a quality contributor at power forward or on the wing, then things look a lot rosier, you know, especially defensively. Things look a lot rosier for them. The New Orleans Pelicans, they were a team among three that I said, hey, they're right in this 35, 36 win type of range, along with Miami and Orlando. I'm going to make the bet that overall Vegas is underrating them because they're just going to succeed in ways that just aren't as apparent to the casual fan at first. They're going to play great defense and they'll get just enough offense to get by. And, you know, they can, the combination of their crappy offense and really good defense will end up being, you know, a 500-ish team. It looks like I only went 1-2 on those, as it appears the Pels are probably going to not go over. I bet over 37.5 when I got the line from that William Hill sportsbook in London on October 1st. So yeah, they're projected for 36 right now and have a little bit of incentive to tank it down the end, although a lot of incentive not to, because there are some reports lately that Joe Dumars might be back in the mix at GM, that Alvin Gentry had to show improvement over over the end of the season to keep his job. So it'll be interesting to see what their incentives are, but not projected to get to that 37.5.
It's also a more abstract reason to tank because they only keep their pick if it's top three and they're not even going to get particularly close to that. So it's basically giving yourself more ping pong balls, but not that many more. So it would make a difference, you know, organizationally. So, but if you can't get the coach to buy in, it's going to be harder. I think Davis is going to be the pivot point in all this. So I expect them to go under, but since it's not done yet, we can go that way. How do you feel? Of course, there is a way to hedge on this and say, well, tell me on July 1st or whatever, but how do you feel about the Pelicans moving forward now compared to how you felt on October 1st when we did this?
Oh, much better, just because they have Cousins. I think that, well, I don't necessarily think that that upside is going to be realized. And as you mentioned, they have the holiday free agency to deal with. They still need to get some more players in on the wings for the 937th consecutive year, guys who can shoot and play some D on the wings. But nonetheless, just having that, you know, huge talent in the cupboard now that they didn't before, just as an organization, they have so much more upside than they did, even if I think the chances of them realizing it are probably well below 50%, just because some of their organizational problems that they've had, Cousins himself being a mercurial talent, to say the least. So one thing actually that we didn't talk about, did you think at all about when the Kings played the Pels, like what the Kings incentive would have been? Because the Kings have the Pels draft pick, so it would have helped to beat the Pels and increase that pick. But then by losing, they would be by winning, they'd be hurting their own draft pick, theoretically getting potentially into contention for losing their top 10 protected pick to the Bulls, although that's still pretty far off. Would have been an interesting math problem, just like, hey, is it in their interest just to win or lose this game?
Are you really asking if I thought about the implications of dual-sided pick protection? Because the answer is yes. But the issue there for me is you always prioritize the better pick, and so you want to maximize, and the better pick is their own. So I think you want to go that way. But considering how close those teams are in record, yeah, it's more of a situation.
But their own pick is also swappable as well. That's another consideration.
Yeah, but a swap is still means that they're going to get a pick from the Sixers, so there's a benefit there as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And the Sixers pick, I think, is still projected to be like one better than Sacramento's is. Let's get to OKC. 45.5. I had the under. I thought they would get to 44 wins. You also had the under. It was looking like a few weeks ago that they would be right in line with that, might even go under. And then due to some of these completely ridiculous Russell Westbrook performances in the clutch, they have massively outperformed their point differential, and they are almost certain to exceed that over. Are they almost certain? Maybe not, but it looks like they're going to get there.
They have a lot of games left against teams that aren't going to be trying very hard, so they should be able to go over it. This was the hardest line to set for me, like, just not in terms of our evaluation, but just in terms of setting it, because they lost not only Kevin Durant, but Serge Ibaka, and they got Victor Oladipo back, but we had no idea what this team was going to look like. And they have outperformed expectations. Russ has been spectacular. Thought Billy Donovan has done a very good job with this team. And also, it helped immensely that Sam Presti made a good trade at the deadline. They got McDermott, who hasn't been that big of an impact, and Taj Gibson, who I think has played well and shored up their depth. And I think all of that helped a little bit. And of course, Russ was the engine that drove all of this. And they have plenty of incentive to push to the finish line, which is also what makes me think it's going to go over.
Yeah, they would have to go 2-4 in their last six to hit the under here. But given the fact that their point differential is going to end up right around 1.0, I think that a lot of the things that we thought about this team have proven true in terms of their lack of shooting. Their defense would probably be pretty good, but it really, the difference has just been Russell Westbrook going crazy, both over the course of the season. I mean, he's had even a better year than any of us would have thought. And then going crazy in close games. I mean, that Dallas
game. That's exactly where I was
going
to go. Like, if this team wasn't one of the best clutch teams in the league, then we would have hit they would have hit the under. Like, they've been spectacular. One of the best defenses in the clutch. They've been very good offensively. Russell Westbrook has this ludicrous usage at that point. And yeah, if they lose a couple of those games, then this swings the other way, but they deserve credit for making it happen.
The Phoenix Suns, this is one 26.5 that we both had wrong. They, surprisingly to me, have been in full on, I mean, surprisingly to me, based on what we thought at the start of the season, have been in absolute full-on tank mode since the All-Star break. Eric Bledsoe has been shut down for not that much reason. Brandon Knight, who we thought actually could be like a solid piece for them off the bench, has given them absolutely nothing, and he hasn't played since the All-Star break either. So they, I mean, they've been starting Tyler Ulis and Chris and Dragan Bender hasn't even been playing necessarily. Alex Len, Tyson Chandler has been shut down as well. I think maybe if they had continued trying, because they were starting to look kind of frisky at times, like in January, if they had actually kept trying and played all their guys, maybe they get close to that 26.5. Our thinking at the time, basically, do you remember what it was in both of us going over?
I think we both just thought so I had used the term disaster potential last year to describe the team, and they had just a rough year on and off the court, all the stuff with the Morris twins and everything else. And so the idea was that they were better than their record last year. And if they had done that again, that they would have been a little bit better than this number. And they went younger than we thought, because they added guys like Jared Dudley and Leandro Barbosa, so you thought maybe they were going to give fewer minutes to their young guys. And
Dudley has not played nearly as many minutes as he should have on merit, and they might have been better if he had done that.
Maybe he'd be a little bit better than Marquise Chris, maybe. and I understand why they did that. You know, I totally get why teams with young guys want to play those young guys. I support it, especially when you're not very good. But I expected them to do that more, and it would have made a difference.
Yeah, I felt pretty confident in the over. And then I did the Phoenix preview pod and really started thinking about their forward rotation and some of the fact that they really didn't have any kind of average NBA players at the forward positions, that their centers were probably going to be pretty weak. That's been the case as well. But our thinking was that their backcourt would be pretty good. We thought that Knight, Bledsoe, and Booker would be their three best players, in fact. And the thinking was, I think, what did they win, like 23-24 last year? And then that was a season where Bledsoe only played until maybe like a third of the season. And so he felt like, hey, if that's the baseline and he's going to play all year, and Knight missed a bunch of time too, Booker's going to be a year better, so these other young guys are going to be a year better, that they would look pretty good for the over. But, again, this is another one now where they're kind of starting to fall into that category ever since Goran Dragic left of, all right, these guys kind of find a way to be bad. And, I think that's going to kind of be a little bit of my default thinking on this team until proven otherwise.
It's certainly a fair way to think about it at this point, but I don't think there's much more that we need to say right now. We'll have plenty more to say on them later on. Portland, the line was set at 46.5. They had a wonderful surprise year last year. They were the first team, I believe, to clinch going over their number. And we both felt this was just a little bit too rosy for them, and it ended up being a little bit more than too rosy for them.
Ah, good pun there.
I didn't even think about that. Yay!
it ended up being a little too Moda-y for them. We both had the under. I did predict 46 wins. I thought they would be better than OKC. That hasn't been the case. They're now projected for 41, well over 95% chance of being the eighth seed as Denver has fallen off and they beat them last week. So it's, and their offense for most of the year wasn't quite as awesome as we thought it would be. And then their defense was really, worst in the league type of levels recently. And then, they would have been like way under, probably wouldn't have made the playoffs. And then since they acquired Nurkic, who now unfortunately is going to miss 2 weeks at least with this non-displaced fracture. And I would imagine it'll probably be more. He's not exactly known as a quick healer. And so that'll probably spill into the playoffs, unfortunately, which will kind of mess up what could have at least been a fun series between Golden State and Portland. But nonetheless, I think just the offense not being quite as awesome. Evan Turner, at least, especially during the first 2 months of the season, having a really bad effect on the team. Total lack of backup big men, and then just no force defensively. Al-Farouq Aminu missing a bunch of time really killed their defense early on as well. I think had it not been necessarily for some of those injuries, they might have been a little bit closer to what we thought. I think we just were a little too rosy on that, but at least we both went with the under, and I think that was the right decision. They definitely, we certainly felt like that was one of those ones where you're like, okay, if the line's 46.5, is the tail on the top side or the bottom side? And I felt it was on the bottom side, and I think that ended up being right.
Yeah, it was the same logic I got wrong on the Clippers I got right here. So we can move on to the Spurs, another team where there was kind of some of that same kind of tail logic involved. The Spurs had one of the best regular seasons of all time last year. The 67 was the final number, right?
Yeah, 67-15, and that even that was due to resting some down the very end. I mean, their point differential was superior to the Warriors for much of last year.
Right. And the biggest change was losing Tim Duncan. They signed Dwayne Dedmon, who ended up had a fabulous year relative to expectations for them. You were very confident in this over. You were more confident in it than I was, not only saying they would win 59, but putting some of your fake dollars on it. But we both picked the over, and they've already clinched.
Yeah, 56.5. I predicted them for 59. And to me, I just didn't get how people had them being 10 games worse than last year, right? Like Kawhi Leonard was only going to get better. I felt that ended up happening. The loss of Tim Duncan was something, but he really just wasn't playing that many minutes. I didn't think he was that essential to what they were doing defensively at this point. I thought their defense would actually take more of a step back than it has, but I thought their offense would actually be a lot better because I thought with Gasol's skill level, I also thought that Danny Green couldn't help but shoot a lot better on three-pointers this year, and that's in fact what happened. So, and we thought that they could get some more out of Dwayne Dedmon, and then a shot blocking element that they hadn't had. I didn't think they were going to really miss Boris Diaw or David West all that much, because this is just a belief in Pop and the system. And I think a lot of people, when they see that 56.5, it's like, oh, Pop always rests all these guys, and you know that they don't really try that hard in the regular season. And that to me is just a little bit contrary to reality. I mean, they do rest guys, but the Spurs in general, I think, you know, and they have won a title since 2011, but in 2011 I look at it as like really the first season of this new modern era of Spurs basketball. In that time, the Spurs have actually been much better in the regular season, and they also, I think, the only time during that time that they lost or that they won less than that 56.5 was in 2014-15, and then they got LaMarcus Aldridge. So it was I felt very confident in that one. That was my thinking, and that's one that we can both tally up.
They win a ton of coin flip games, not only if they're close, but just even on talent. Like, they out-execute people. They also have not necessarily continuity of talent, but continuity of system and of direction. And they can win a ton of games that way. And that makes it even more impressive. Like, they are a dominant regular season team in terms of record, despite not having to push for every single game, not gunning for it the way that certain other teams do. And so, yeah, I mean, this was an easier over to pick than the last couple of years. And I think they've gone over for a little while now.
Pretty amazing that these last 2 years, again, when they won in 2014, 2015, they kind of took a step back, and you would think, all right, you know, this is going to be it. Tim Duncan's going to retire. Manu, Tony Parker, those guys are on the downside. And then they won 67 most games in the Popovich era last year, and they're projected this year for 63, which would be tied for second most in the Popovich era, with their star-crossed 2006 team that lost in the second round, that classic series to the Mavs.
Anything more on the Spurs, or do you want to move on to Sacramento?
No, I think we've done enough patting ourselves on the back.
Sacramento is the line was set at 32.5. They have 30 wins right now, so they would have to win three more games. They have to go 3-2. I still think there's an outside chance they do it, just because this team is so weird and ends up winning games that you don't expect.
They're playing hard to the credit of some of these. I mean, like Ty Lawson, they won at Minnesota last night. Ty Lawson had like 25 and 11. They're getting production out of Ben McLemore. He was pretty good last night.
And they also have three games left against teams that are actually doing more, probably arguably tanking, than they are. And then one of their other games is a home game against the Rockets, which if James Harden were willing to rest ever, would be a very logical game to rest James Harden.
Yeah, our thinking on this one for the over was that, you know, they're going to have Cousins all year. They're going to have better coaching. It'd be interesting to see if they kept Cousins, whether this over would come through or not, because, you know, I don't know that they've been playing appreciably worse without him, which has been a little bit of a surprise. But, you know, maybe I think it's an interesting argument, certainly, of whether Cousins was overrated or not. So, yeah, we'll see what ends up happening on this one. Probably not going to hit it, but still in contention. I mean, that's one where they've had somewhat of a different season than we would have thought. But I mean, I think actually the biggest disappointment for them, for me, was I actually thought that they could be decent defensively this year with Jaeger, bringing in guys like Tolliver, who could play as a combo forward. Matt Barnes, remember, was a free agent acquisition who could play some. We thought Caspi was going to play. I thought we're going to see a lot of good combo forwards who could shoot a little bit and also switch around Cousins. That didn't really materialize into a good defense. Cousins' individual defense was extremely disappointing. So I think if they could have, that was the big thing that we got wrong about them, was we thought they could defend it, and that just didn't happen while Cousins was on the team.
My parallel is to the Suns, where I thought that last year was a more negative than their talent level would indicate, and the line was set, I think, relatively close. I think they won like 32 or 33 games last year. And with that logic, it was like, okay, you know, they have a better coach. They're going to buy in a little bit. New coach, less turmoil than last year. Arguably, you know, I would say they had more better talent than and more conducive talent to winning than they did before. But things just fell enough off the rails that it's probably going to go under.
Utah Jazz, 47.5 was their over under. You and I both took the over. You have this in green. They only have 47 wins as of this. Is
they're
right?
Going to win one more game.
Yeah, I would imagine so. So we could feel good about that. Projected for 50 overall. And the fact that they have had such a season from hell, you know, well, I guess it's been a weird season because Hayward, Gobert, George Hill, when he's been healthy, have all played way better than we would have thought. But yet, they've had a ton of injuries. Hood has never really been able to get into a rhythm. Alec Burks hasn't been a good player for them this year. Hill has missed a bunch of time with his toe. Now he has a groin thing. Derek Favors basically has had like five good games all year, at least by what his previous standards would have been, although he still helps when he's out there. In some ways, you could say that we didn't get this right because we didn't see the way they're going to win, which was Rudy Gobert turning into the player that he's been and Gordon Hayward taking another step forward. And that's really carried them, those two players. But on the other hand, you could say, hey, they had all these injuries and they're still going to go over. The over was the right pick.
I'm going to push back a little bit on that because one of the reasons that we liked them was their depth. And while we couldn't have predicted the specific injuries that happened, we thought that they had the players to withstand.
But I guess what I'm saying, though, is I don't know that their depth really has been what's done it for them.
Joe Ingles has been a massive part of this.
Okay, that's a good point. Yeah, Joe Ingles, true. I mean, they've between him and Burks and you know,
Joe Johnson,
Exum could be useful. Yeah, Joe Johnson is another one who's been, like, between all those guys, I guess you could say, all right, so, you know, some of these guys will cobble together good seasons. But, you know, I would say, I mean, they still have struggled whenever Hayward or Gobert goes to the bench. And so I think it's really been more the individual brilliance of those two players more so than their depth that's really carried them. I mean, because they had a lot of depth and they still don't really have enough. I mean, like, they're still, you know, below average at power forward and point guard when Hill and Favors have been out, which has been frequently.
Anything else on the Jazz, or do you kind of want to move to some of the overall stuff?
Yeah. So let's go to just like our fake money and it as well. So what's the total then, by the way, just for our over unders before we get to our fake money?
So your totals right now, you have 13 that I'm saying have won, 3 that are almost certain, 5 up in the air, 3 that have a small chance of winning, though those will probably become losses, and then 6 outright losses. I have 10 wins, 2 almost certain, same 5 up in the air, 4 with a small chance, and then 9 losses. But then that ties us in with the money.
Yeah, it's funny because this is the second year in a row that I've beaten you on like just picking each team's over under. I think last year I had like 19 or 20. It looks like I'm going to end up, you know, pretty close to there again this year, even in what I thought was kind of a weird year. But then if I'm better at picking, you're better at betting because this will be the second year in a row. Oh wait, did I beat you last year because Golden State didn't win the championship?
You did beat me because Golden State lost the championship.
That's right. I forgot about that because you had Golden State at what, like 5-1 to win the championship at the start of the year, and like that was looking fantastic until about 4 minutes left in game 7.
Yeah. So this year was really interesting because we had a lot of the same bets, but we just had different amounts, and then where we differed ended up being the big story. So we both agreed on Milwaukee under as our best bet. You bet 50 of your fake $100. I bet 55. We both completely missed on that. So then all that's take it out. So that means we're also both bad at betting because the thing we threw the most resources on and the thing we would have thrown the most resources on if it hadn't changed was Charlotte, and that lost too. None of us included that. So then what was left, you went Spurs over with $20, Brooklyn over with 15, Houston over with 10, and then Charlotte winning the division. And it looks like
that was 4-1 on
30 of those dollars have already hit. Then the Charlotte winning the Southeast. And then so you have $30 that hit. Brooklyn is an unlikely coin flip. Like, I don't think you're gonna get that. I would say it's, you know, like on the low end. And then I had 30 on Houston going over, 10 on Denver going over, and then 5 on Charlotte winning the Southeast Division, the same bet, and 40 of mine is going over. So basically, and I cracked up because I didn't listen to our whole Over Under podcast when I was putting this together, but the part I did listen to, you talked about how putting 15 on Brooklyn was exciting because it would encourage you to watch them at the end of the season, and I made fun of you because I thought that sounded like a terrible fate, and I'm very happy to be right on that.
Hey, they're not so bad now with Jeremy.
They've been
Lin.
More
they're
fun
exciting.
To watch the last month. I mean, I watched their game against, I think it was the game against Detroit. I watched like the last 5 minutes of that game, was absolutely enthralled.
Yeah, they won 7 games in March, Brooklyn Nets. Yeah, that Charlotte division bet was they were at 4-1 to win the Southeast that we both liked. All right, so just we'll do a couple other questions here. What do you think your smartest pick was?
I think Portland's under. That was one where it was a little bit nuanced to kind of say, to because it was a lot about evaluation of talent. Like, that was the reason that I did it. And and also the tails, as you talked about. And I feel like that was well-reasoned and worked out well. And it was also why I think it was the smartest one is because it wasn't conventional wisdom at the time, other than maybe the two of us in our little group think.
Yeah, and we were so down on their offseason too. I think that was part of the thinking there. I agree with you.
Can I make one small point? I forgot to do this when we were talking about the Blazers. Evan Turner is kind of like a larger scale example of Jeff Teague, where he's been a lot better since we both got like frustrated with how bad he was, and he's actually played pretty well recently. So I want to take a little bit of that, you know, the not spiking of the football, but the, you know, when he was dead last in RPM and everything like that, because he's been much better since.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it really, you know, I wasn't that I thought he was just a terrible player overall. I mean, obviously way overpaid at his current number, but it was more just the fit issue that I really took issue with that signing. For me, I thought I wanted to say Miami, but frankly, like, they've succeeded in a way that I don't think we saw coming. So I'll go with that Spurs over. I mean, that was one that I never got it. This team is always good. Why would you think that they would have like such a bad season this year? I mean, I guess it was just Tim Duncan is retired, but you know, Tim wasn't playing that much. So yeah, that would be what I'd point to. What was your dumbest pick?
Detroit over. I think that's pretty clearly. I ignored my own logic, and I just believed in Stan Van Gundy, and I even though I didn't think there was a 50-win team in there, and there was certainly a 40-win team in there, I ignored it because I believed in Stan Van. I thought that they had an underrated year the season before, and that they could have outperformed that by a little bit. But what I should have seen is that I was betting on 40% instead of 60%, and that's just the way it goes.
I think you're being too harsh on yourself there. I think that if Reggie Jackson had just had the same season as last year, I mean, there's reason to think he would be better this year. There's reason to think that Andre Drummond would be better this year. You know, I think just the normal progression of a young team that actually is young, as opposed to Portland, where, you know, Dame and CJ were kind of already in the area where you wouldn't necessarily expect them to improve that much more in terms of age. So I think you're being too harsh on yourself there, especially because, you know, I had the same thing as you did. For me, it was Charlotte, and especially, well, not only just to the fact that it was wrong, but the degree to which it was wrong, especially just because it was all right there, you know, that Roy Hibbert, we knew the game had kind of passed him by, and he wasn't that good anymore anyway, and he was one of the worst offensive players in basketball. Frank Kaminsky, never been a believer in him. They had to rely on him a ton. The Bellinelli trade, which we really disliked. Marvin Williams taking a step back. He actually has been a little bit better. Batum taking a step back from a career year has been an underrated part of their struggles as well. So probably just, and I guess even all that said, in terms of their point differential, they've kind of been there. And maybe if Zeller isn't hurt as much, that they could have had a different season. But nonetheless, I was like so sure about that one, and that obviously was wrong. I guess the question is, why aren't we saying Milwaukee is our dumbest pick? That's the one that we were kind of
because
wrong on.
The way that they exceeded expectations was not something that was easy to foresee. You know, like that surprising developments happen in a positive and negative direction all the time in the NBA, and they had a lot of different things pulling the same way at the same time that it was unreasonable to expect that, especially since we knew about the Middleton injury. I mean, Brogdon is probably the best example of this. You know, like Brogdon, even though we had seen him in summer league and he looked good at moments, yeah, like we thought
there was
he could
no
be a
reason
player
to think he'd be a rookie of the year candidate. Like there's no
and
reason to think that.
Giannis, I mean, there was always a chance Giannis was going to become that all NBA guy. We both have been in love with his potential for years, but the jump that he made, the jump that Jabari made, and I think
and,
that
and Middleton coming back earlier than expected and being really good. I mean, because if he doesn't come back, because we thought, hey, you know what, they might even just like sit him out the whole season because they're just not going to be in it the whole time. But the like if that had happened, this still the under 38 and a half might have still happened. But he is of course has been wonderful.
So yeah, I don't beat myself up over that because those are the types of ones that happen, and it's great when it occurs in a positive direction. When a team exceeds expectations, it can also happen in a negative way where just everything falls apart. Like you can think about when Memphis, when every single player on their team got hurt, or there have been we could throw a million of those in the last couple of years. So that's a little bit different. We can move on to bad beats, and mine is a matter of timing and perspective because through the course of the year, I think that Miami, you know, I said the under on Miami. And through the course of the year, I would say to you, to use a dunked on popularized term, in the aggregate, it hasn't been a bad beat. But considering they were 10-30 and they lost Justice Winslow and it looked like they were going to tank, to go on the run that they did at that point makes it feel to me like a bad beat, though I'm thrilled it happened.
Yeah, for me, if the Lakers end up somehow getting the over, it will absolutely be that. But since it looks like that probably won't happen, Brooklyn would be it for me for the reasons I discussed. You know, if Lynn had played, I think they would, even, you know, 2/3 of the season, I think they would have made the over relatively comfortably.
Last one, lucky win.
For me, I thought it was Minnesota, although their point differential actually has declined a little bit. I mean, they were almost in the positive in point differential. So, you know, I had the under, but it was 41.5. Like that one would have been right there. It would have been close if they had just, you know, lived up to where their point differential has been this year. And also, I think they've been hurt a little bit just by the fact that, like, I mean, Chris Dunn has been awful, but I didn't think he was going to be this bad to where he was like really for most of the season, like shouldn't even be a backup point guard. So that was another thing that I didn't necessarily see coming as to why they've had some real struggles this year, maybe more than we would have thought.
I had fewer wins, so it's harder to find a lucky one. But if either the New Orleans or Sacramento overhits, it'll be that. Because both of those, if they do, it'll basically be for kind of the wrong reasons. So that would be that, yeah. Kind of that qualifies to me.
All right. You know, I put this category in there and then I didn't realize at the time that you'd only beaten me on one of what your best win over me was. So I guess it would be Washington by default.
Yeah, it probably would have been anyway, though.
That's true. Yeah, they've exceeded expectations by a ton. For my best win over you, I guess I would just have to go with the Clippers. I mean, that was just one where because of the injuries. But I mean, there's not a lot of these for these ones that, you know, I'm beating you on. It's not like I was like, oh, yeah, they're going to be 5 wins less. You know, I mean, maybe Miami would be one you could point to, too. But again, you know, it's really that's the way they've succeeded has been so unexpected. So I guess I'll just go with the Clippers. I just didn't believe in their health. They're getting a year older. So that's why I went with the under on them. All right, we done here?
Yeah, I think we are.
All right, sounds good, man. I will see you in Portland in a little bit, and we'll be back Monday night with more great content. Not sure the exact order we're going to do this in, but we still have to do our final awards pod. We're actually going to do an entire pod just on this historic MVP race, break it down into as many relevant categories we can think of, and finally come up with declaring a winner, really try to dig into it. I know we've both been on the Westbrook train, but you know, try to really look at it one more time with fresh eyes and pick who we think it should be. And we'll probably, you know, with Harden struggling a little bit lately, Westbrook coming on, OKC coming on, I mean, maybe we'll try to delay that even a little bit longer just to really get you know, as much recency bias in there as possible. Just kidding. So we got that. Bunch of other, of course, these games with the playoff races coming up. We're going to be at the Nike Hoop Summit, so we'll have a chance to talk about some of those prospects as well as see some Blazers games in person. Looking forward to that. So lots of great content coming up. Don't forget about our sponsors today, Indochino. Use that CapSpace code to get any premium Indochino suit for only $389, custom made to measure suit. And Helix Sleep, get a custom mattress at helixsleep.com/capspace will get you $50 off, and also let them know that you came from us. Talk to you all tomorrow night. Till then.